Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Sten?
Here.
Potter?
Here. I would like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which entity they are authorized to represent. Please read the 2 p.m. time certain.
Item 182, appeal of South Portland Neighborhood Association against Design Commission's decision to approve a new full-block, six-story, mixed-use building on Block 49 of the South Waterfront District, LU07153880DZMAD.
City Attorney's Office will describe the hearing process.
We will begin with a staff report by the Bureau of Development Services staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, the City Council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The appellant will go first and have 10 minutes to present his or her case. Following the appellant, persons who support the appeal will go next. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak to the council. This 3-minute time limit applies regardless of whether you are speaking for yourself or on behalf of an organization such as a business association or neighborhood association. The principal opponent, often the applicant as it is here, will have 15 minutes to address the City Council and rebut the appellant's presentation. After the principal opponent, the council will hear from persons who oppose the appeal, those that support the application. If there is no principal opponent, the council will move directly to testimony from persons who oppose the appeal. After supporters of the appeal conclude their testimony, again, each person will have 3 minutes each, whether speaking for him or herself or on behalf of an organization. Finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes to rebut the presentation of the opponents of the appeal. The council may then close the hearing, deliberate, and take a vote on the appeal. If the vote is a tentative vote, the council will set a future date for adoption of findings and a final vote on the appeal. If the council takes a final vote today, that will conclude the matter before council. I'd like to announce several guidelines for those who will be addressing City Council today. The evidentiary record is closed. This is an on-the-record hearing, which means you must limit your remarks to arguments based on the record compiled by the Design Commission. You may refer to evidence that was previously submitted to the Design Commission. You may not submit new evidence today that was not submitted to the Design Commission. If your argument includes new evidence or issues, the council will not consider it, and it will be rejected in the council's final decision. If you believe a person who addressed council today improperly presented new evidence or presented a legal argument that relies on evidence not in the record, you may object to that argument. Finally, under state law, only issues that were raised before the Design Commission may be raised in this appeal to council. If you believe another person has raised issues today that were not raised before the Design Commission, you may object to council's consideration of that issue. I apologize. I missed the first page. I'm apologizing. So we'll go to the beginning just to make sure there's, I think I covered it all, but let's make sure I haven't missed anything required by state law. This is an on-the-record hearing, which means you must limit your testimony to material and issues in the record. You cannot bring up anything new. The hearing is designed only to decide if the Design Commission made the correct decision based on the evidence presented to them. If you start to talk about new issues or try to present new evidence today, you may be interrupted and reminded that you must limit your testimony to the record.
Thank you. Do any members of council wish to declare a conflict of interest? No council members have a conflict of interest to declare. Do any members of council have any ex parte contacts to declare or information gathered outside of hearing to disclose? No council members have ex parte contacts to declare. Do any members of council have questions or other preliminary matters that need to be addressed before we begin the hearing? I'm going to begin the hearing and we'll call the staff forward. You have 10 minutes.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor Potter, members of council. I'm Mark Walhood, staff with Bureau of Development Services, and we're here today for the appeal of a Design Commission decision in land use case 07-153880DZMAD. I do have with me today, we'll get into the reason why a little bit later, by Andy Wilch from PDC. And the page. page down button is not working. Well, in the interest of moving along, I think I'll just start verbally, and hopefully the PowerPoint will catch up to us. The project is a six-story U-shaped building with a five-story wood-framed apartment structure above single floor of ground floor commercial uses and the residential lobby. There is parking both at and below the street level. There's 209 affordable apartments. The ground floor has retail on the north end along Southwest Lowell, and office space wrapping the rest of the storefront around the parking at the middle of the block. The FAR is approximately 5-1 with a 65-foot building height. That's under the 6-1 allowed FAR and 250-foot allowed height limit. Now I need pictures, so bear with me. My presentation was had it timed at about 5, so hopefully we'll catch up here. Okay, I went through this slide. I'm going to go through really quick. This was just a summary of the project, the components with the 209 apartments, ground floor retail and office space, 115 below grade parking spaces and a loading space, and then another at grade parking area and loading bay. And the FAR and height, a little bit under what the maximum allowed. The zoning, it's on the south edge of South Waterfront District, central commercial zone with a design overlay in central city and South Waterfront. The required land use reviews are the type 3 designer view, an adjustment to allow garage access onto Southwest Bond, which is a parking access restricted street, and 3 modifications related to the loading and parking stall size and layout. In orange here, you should see the site. It's at the very south edge of the district, just north across the street from the Discovery Center and just west of the Spaghetti Factory. This is just a site picture. It's actually from last fall. They recently completed the street work. This is showing the view along Southwest Lowell, and you can make out the glass streetcar shelter, which is the south terminus right now. It's just the roads improved to the curb, or there's sort of temporary asphalt sidewalks. Another view looking down Moody, again, during the street work. It's a surface parking lot inside the
property today. It's another view from the north edge on Lowell and Bond, and then another view looking north. It shows it's a couple blocks south of the current heart of the redevelopment. This is the ground floor plan showing in orange the retail space at the north end on Lowell, straddling the lobby. Retail space is sort of the green-gray on the other three faces and the at-grade parking area. There was a Central City parking review approved yesterday by the hearings officer for this parking, the retail parking, which required that review. And I'm not showing the basement plan here, which has a larger-than-required long-term bike locker room and some tenant storage space. This view shows the second-level courtyard, which is used to manage and convey 92% of the stormwater that falls on the building, goes through runnels and planters in the courtyard, the south-facing second-floor courtyard, and then down a landscape screen wall on the south edge. The slide also shows that the building has pulled back a little bit on the north and south edges from the street with sort of a decking treatment to the walkway surfaces, and there is bike parking at both of the insets on either side of the building. I'm going to go quickly through these elevations. The applicant's going to cover these, but just point out the vertical, some of the things that Design Commission commented on and was pleased to see, which was the vertical arrangement of the window groupings, the inset balconies to help break up the mass of the building. There's a very glassy street-level storefront space that wraps nearly the entire building except at the water wall and the garage entries. This is a view of that screen wall. And then another elevation view. The materials are primarily an off-white stack bond brick with two colors metal panels. There's integral coloration to the window sashes, which is unique, and a wire mesh balcony railing system, and in a few spaces cast in place concrete piers at the street level. Just have a few other views. I'm going to go through these quickly. At the streetcar stop on the north edge, night view, and then a couple other perspectives from the other edge, northeast corner at the streetcar stop, and then along the south edge. I wanted to point out that this picture on the bottom is the original concept that was presented to Design Commission back in June. The applicant did make several changes in response to Design Commission issues that were raised, including adding additional brick at the northwest corner, what's being called the anchor volume, increasing the vertical appearance of the building by modifying the window framing and skin and metal pattern systems. You can sort of see this has more of sort of a horizontal feel to it. Maintaining the active open level storefronts, critically increasing it a little bit at the north corner near the streetcar stop, and significantly changing the brick from a dark to a light color. Commission noted some concerns about the growing dark character to the district. Just a few more of these changes that were made. Additional glazing at the southwest corner. Bringing the stormwater elements from the courtyard down to the street level with this vegetated stormwater landscape green wall. Doing a light-colored rock pebble roof surface and just paying careful attention to the materials. The first staff report just had a few items requesting clarification, but otherwise supported the project. Design Commission also had a few items that they were looking for some more information on at the first hearing, encouraging tenant access through the courtyard gate, additional information about the rooftop and concrete surfaces, and some just clarifications to the plant list. The hearing was continued. The applicant provided some additional drawings, and a letter was received at the continued hearing in December from the South Portland Neighborhood Association. The Design Commission did consider the new details in the letter from the neighborhood and ended up unanimously approving the project with a standard condition. I'm at issue in the appeal today. The neighborhood has raised several issues. The approval criteria are limited to the two sets of design guidelines that apply, and then there are some modification and adjustment criteria related just to the transportation and loading related requests. Of course, the appellant will go into more detail. I just wanted to provide a staff response to the appeal issues raised in the letter. There's a couple items related to that could be considered design-related statements. There's not a lot of specificity for me to provide much more than that response, other than to just note that there are some design-related comments. There weren't any transportation or loading issues identified. There are several other issues related to the affordability, LEED standards, and tax increment financing elements of the project. But if it was before staff or the design commission, I think the discussion would have been that those aren't directly related to the guidelines. They are important issues, which is why Andy Wilch is here. I'm going to leave it with the standard council alternatives, deny the appeal, and uphold the design commission's decision, grant the appeal and overturn the design commission's decision, or deny the appeal but modify somehow the decision. And I'm going to leave it up to you whether you want to hear from Andy now, who's the South Waterfront Program Manager for Affordable Housing, or if you want to go have him up here for questions later.
Andy, why don't you just describe would you mind describing how the housing's to be used?
I'd be happy to. Mr. Mayor, Council, Andy Wilch, Director of Housing, Portland Development Commission. I don't have any comments on the design appeal itself. Obviously, other folks are here to handle that. The program, Block 49, the building's called the Tamarack is the name of it. It will be the first affordable rental project in South Waterfront. It'll be the first affordable housing project in the North Macadam Urban Renewal Area since its inception. And it will be the first publicly financed affordable housing project anywhere in the South Waterfront area. There, it's proposed to be 208 units of studios, ones, two bedrooms. We've worked long and hard with all of you and Dan Bates, for your legislative director, to see if we could create a project here that has some impact on the lives of folks that obviously impact our lives, and those are the veterans. This project is proposed to be affirmatively marketed to all veterans. Specifically, 42 units of the 208 would be units available, targeted specifically to veterans who make less than 30% of median family income, veterans that are homeless, formerly homeless, at risk of being homeless. Many of these units and the individuals will meet the city's 10-year plan to homelessness, specifically permanent supportive housing. And so it's the proximity to the OHSU campus, the Veterans Hospital, and the grave needs of these particular clients are the genesis and the driver for us on this project. One thing I might add is there's never the expectation, though there's always our desire, but not the expectation that an affordable housing project would generate tax increment financing. If it was, then the public sector probably wouldn't need to subsidize it the way we are. And so that's the one point I wanted to make. Happy to answer any questions on the program.
Questions? So publicly financed means PDC housing?
There's a financial feasibility gap. The source, the cost of the building are greater than the private sector investment that can come in. And so we're still working to finalize the numbers, but we believe the investment will be between $20 and $25 million of tax increment finance, which is about $108,000, I believe, of public finance per unit, which is fairly consistent with what we're seeing in today's marketplace with cost escalation, and for the quality of construction, and for the range of amenities that the residents will enjoy.
And what is our understanding about its level of LEED certification?
Well, I'm going to defer to the Ancrum Moisson architects that are here on that question, not to put that off, but this building is modeled after a wildly successful building in the River District called the Sitka Apartments. And the Sitka Apartments has the same kind of development program. It's the 5-over-1. It is stick frame, has great outside treatments. And I might add that there's about over 200 persons on the waiting list to get into the Sitka. Wildly successful. The quality of design and the quality of finishes and so forth is very comparable to that. And I'll defer to the architects to talk about the specifics on that.
Okay. Why weren't there any three-bedroom units?
You know, I guess it's two reasons. It's financial feasibility. When you take up more square footage for larger rooms, you can't generate as much income, which is the same financial basis for why we see so many small for-sale condominium units that are being built. So it's a unit yield issue, number one. Number two, we had proposed all along to create a project that met what we believe the city's primary housing policy objective, which is the 10-year plan to end homelessness, and to serve populations that have the fewest choices in the marketplace. And we're aiming to do that, and we're going to be successful in doing that. Larger family units in conjunction with a hard-to-house population doesn't always work that well together. We want to put all of our residents in a position to be successful, and we thought they'd be less successful if we tried to mix too many different populations together in one building.
Other questions? Thanks, folks.
Thank you.
The appellant, come forward. Mr. Davis? When you speak, state your name, and you have 10 minutes, sir.
2 minutes?
10.
I'm sorry. My name is James Davis. 2337 Southwest 6th Avenue. I'm land use chairman for the South Portland Neighborhood Association. I realize that brevity is something we all seek in this room, but we very rarely accomplish, but I'm going to try that to be as brief as possible today. As the former speaker said, we in the South Neighborhood Association did look at this design, carefully studied it, and see that it does fail to meet the high design standards of the district. We also felt that the design guidelines were not met. It fails to meet certainly the high standards of the LEED certification. It contributes so the structure itself, the construction of it may not be appropriate for the geology of the site, since this is a floodplain, also an earthquake zone, and subject to high water at odd times. It fails to provide affordable family housing, which is something that has been the object of our neighborhood for over 30 years. And it has never met the highest and best use standards, which the Bureau normally uses when it views projects. At this time, I'd like to reserve the balance of my time for rebate. I have nothing more to say at this juncture.
You actually get 5 minutes on the rebuttal. You can't carry this portion over, so.
Well, then I guess
we're... Would you like to continue?
No, I won't continue, sir, only because I'd like to hear what the justifications for this thing that they're building is. I will say this, that similar projects throughout the city have not been successful. Certainly, the project at 60th and Gleason has failed to really meet the standards that were originally purported to work. There's problems in the New Columbia area, which is still early times, and I don't mean to harp on that. But one last thing, and I was surprised by the former speaker, that he would mention veterans housing. Originally, it was 10 units, then we heard 20 a week ago, now it's up to 42. He didn't mention, however, the size of these things. We have heard as recently as yesterday from PDC that the veterans units will be significantly smaller than any of the other units in this project. So you might want to be a little bit careful or have a little more specificity when you talk about these particular things, because so many times we think we're getting one thing and we're not getting what we thought. Lastly, let me suggest that under this camouflage of a specious claim of affordability, what exactly are we getting? Our neighborhood has been asking for, and this city has been screaming for, certainly Mr. Adams, I've heard you on several occasions talk about affordable family housing. I think this is the first and best chance that our neighborhood will have at this site for affordable housing for families. And I don't want any confusion on this point. This is not a NIMBY situation for our neighborhood. We're asking for more affordable housing, more family affordable housing than what this project is going to produce. And now I'll shut up and we can continue.
I have a question.
I'm sorry?
I have a question.
Yes, Mr. Linder.
Jim, you've appealed the design of the building. So we're here making a judgment as to the design. But as you're speaking, you're talking about examples of how the project at 60th and Gleason operates, how the project in New Columbia operates. Is what you're really concerned about is not the design, but who it is that's going to be served by this project?
What I'm really concerned about is 33.825035 factors reviewed during a design review, which I don't think have been met. Although they've been...
With all due respect, what does New Columbia and 60th and Gleason have to do with that?
Well, I'm trying to answer your question, sir. I use those as examples of what has not worked, whereas the applicant is now saying it will work in South Waterfront. I think
work in what way?
Work in terms of a mixed income
What's that
situation.
Got to do with the design?
Well, it has a lot to do with the design. If you're going to have 30 or 44 people in simple, no more than sleeping rooms, and the rest people living in one bedroom and studios, I think the design itself is going to be problematic for those people who probably most need housing at this time. Design is much more than just than what the Design Commission assigned to it. It does talk about architectural styles, structural placement, dimensions, height, and bulk, a bunch of things that they decide to take the simplest things. I find is relatively interesting in that if we have an applicant, for instance, who wants to make a modification on his home, they will spend hours talking about the shape of a window, but when they have a major project, they will pick out those things that need modifications to the design, to the code, and very rarely really get into architectural style and the function of the building as it should be serving these people. So design is much more than just function or modifications, and that is our position.
Thank you.
Also, Jim had a question about...
Yes.
You mentioned the fact that the water feature could be turned off.
It certainly can be. It depends. Again, I've seen things happen over my 40 years in this city where we will be getting one thing, but unfortunately we have to turn something off because of the cost of money, whether it's the Benson fountains or something. There's nothing. What I'm saying is they're presenting one thing, but there's nothing to say that in 3 to 5 years, if this building is sold to another owner, exactly what will happen.
Are you aware, Jim, that the water feature consists of stormwater runoff?
I am, and I also...
And so there's no cost associated after the construction other than the maintenance functions.
Well, that is a cost, sir. Our major concerns, to going back to Mr. Leonard, is to the function of this building within our neighborhood. I think we can do much better at this site than what we're being offered, especially at the price that we're paying and will be paying for a long, long time. So why don't we end it here? We'll hear what the applicant has to say, and then I'll come back and wave some flags, and then we'll get on to things. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Now we'll hear from persons who support the appeal.
No one signed up.
Okay, then we'll move to the principal opponent, which is the applicant. Now you can come forward.
I support it.
Quick overview of what the project looks like here. That's you're okay.
He'd be glad to hold one of them for you if you'd like.
You want to hold the material board?
Finally, a use for a reporter.
All right.
Thank you for being here. When you speak, please state your name for the record.
I have
15 minutes.
All right. My name is Mark Nordine. I work at Anchor Moisten Architects, designer of this project. I'm going to probably just address some of the issues that were brought up from Jim Davis in the neighborhood. Association. It's applicable to the issues of the design. I think we have other people that can obviously speak to the other issues that he has concerns with, and I think they did a great job doing it. It's kind of a bittersweet being here. I wish that I wasn't here, but on the other hand, it's great to show such a great project that I've been a part of to get to actually face-to-face, get to present to you guys. I have three basic topics that I'll pretty much talk about. It's the general overview of the design in itself, the water feature, which is actually a stormwater element, as you guys started to discuss a little bit here earlier, and the sustainable components to the project in which we're following. So with that said, I guess I can just go ahead and start with the basic design, pretty much as an overview and not down to the nitty-gritty as we did in the design review and all little components. Basically, at the very beginning, we had a vision for the affordable project down South Waterfront. It was a personal goal as well as a design team to make this project fit within the context of the South Waterfront and its ever-evolving towers and podiums and the glassiness down there. And I feel like within those goals and the hard work between the contractor and ourselves and the owner, we've fulfilled that requirement as the exterior of the building, as well as the interior of the building, which there was a comment made that these people will be staying in small sleeping corridors, which in fact, the units are the exact same units laid out as our condo units, meaning the studio, two-bedroom, one-bedroom. Materials may be different inside there, but the layout and stuff is essentially the same. Some of the things that we felt was pretty strong, and I think it meets all of the South Waterfront standards and the Central City design guidelines. It kind of shows, and it's not your stereotype affordable housing project with its rich palette of materials. As you can see behind me, we've used a high quality a brick metal panel, mesh for the decks, and the architectural language of the building in general is basically four volumetric volumes floating above a plinth of glass at the retail, really showing off the active use at the ground floor. All three of the volumes are surrounded by a counterpoint to the north elevation, which is on Lowell. We've kind of addressed the Lowell and the temporary entry point to the South Waterfront in two different ways. One meaning northwest corner, we've dropped down to the ground with the brick, punched out forward, proud, welcoming the streetcar arrival, pulled back the building, allowed a little more queuing area in there for not only the streetcar, but the retail, potential people coming into the leasing office. On the south side of the building, just real quick, we incorporated the stormwater feature that Jim has alluded to. No, there's no way we could turn this thing off. It's actually a component to our sustainable piece to the project where we have collected 100% of the stormwater on site. Let it flow through the flow through planters, and the roof itself, we've taken 100% of that. I think Mark alluded to it was like 95. We've actually got all of the drains to get into the second floor courtyard now, and it daylights itself down into the second floor, 100% of the stormwater, shows itself for the tenants, not only visually but audibly. And then it flows out onto the Bancroft area, poking itself out to the general public as the storm element during high rainfall events. It was a U-shaped building, solar orientation, that therefore it accommodates that second floor courtyard with all the green growies. And within the green courtyard up above, one of the comments was if you can get some of that green down to the street level and provide some of the green finger components to South Waterfront. We've actually incorporated along with the stormwater fountain, as you can see on one of the renderings, some green screen panels, which then link up to the second floor. So really taking a real good stance at taking a look at what we're providing for not only the tenants, but the passerbys and the existing South Waterfront district. So that's pretty much an overview of the design in itself. Next, I could probably talk a little bit about the sustainable component to the project. Basically, our building follows the utmost highest standards of PDC Green building policy and the program guidelines. The PDC supports a number of green standards, means and measures of the building performance, including what we're going down the path right now with a Earth Advantage certification program. We're working very closely with Earth Advantage and a person helping us along, making sure we're fulfilling all the requirements for that program. And right now it's basically a pilot project for the local Earth Advantage program for the multifamily certification. At the very beginning of our project, we had big eco charrette constructed by Brightworks to help us guide along and figuring out what strategies we can take to fulfill all the requirements. And then now, at the end of the day, when the building is being constructed, there'll be a third-party person coming in and making sure all the components are fulfilled to meet that certification. So that's a little bit about the Earth Advantage, sustainable environmental component to the building that I just want to touch on. And in depth, I think I already talked a little bit about that stormwater that Jim had a concern about. And the great thing about it is that it'll be on during the rainwater and it'll never be turned off for the most part. Addressing other issues that came up during the appeal, there was, I think Mark Walhood is hit pretty well, as well as Andy, and I think that's kind of all I really have. If you want to look at some of the exhibits of the building, it pretty much speaks for itself. You go touch and feel the material board. I'm pretty happy to be a part of it. It's not your stereotype punched opening, hardy, stucco, affordable family project. One final piece to it. I don't think I've had as many compliments inside of my office from my colleagues and South Waterfront people down there saying, "What? This is an affordable project? Have you guys gone through your VE stuff yet? And can you afford all this?" And happy to say, yeah, we're on a path. We have figured it out. And through tight-knit communication amongst the design team, we're on a great path. So the bittersweet, I'm happy to be here amongst you guys. And this is it. This is what the design team has looked forward to. And I have one more meeting after this at South Waterfront. And then hopefully we can start building. That's all I have.
I had a couple of questions, and
they
focus on the last two pages of this brochure that you handed out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. What like that is.
Okay.
All right. As you know, we've all gone through scrutiny of all the different parties and meeting our DARs, our staff reviews, two design reviews, one meeting with South Waterfront. And what you see in the back of that packet is one of the renditions of our design that the commissioners voiced some concern about certain components. So it's a direct reflection of how the process has worked and And quite honestly, I thought when I first presented that, that was like the end-all, be-all design. And I have to say, the process is working great, and it's becoming a far better and improved project for the community as a whole and down South Waterfront. So long story short, that's where the building used to be. This is where we are today.
Okay. And what sort of caught my attention is on the second to last page, it talked, someone from the Design Commission stated that that the color could come off as a cheap, affordable project.
What he ended up talking about is that you have to be careful about using dark brick and be careful about using bright, vivid colors inside of your project. If you can pull back and do a black and white, and if your building is still singing the way it should sing and not rely on color, then it's a successful building. And so what you can see in some of the renderings in there is that there's a lot more kind of punchy, vibrant orange colors. We've toned that all down and put it in strategic places for massing, scale-breaking devices. So that's, and then the black brick, they were concerned that it absorb pretty much all the light in the world and not have shadow or depth. So, and with the glassy South Waterfront buildings going down, they asked us to look for a lighter color palette.
Other questions?
How does Earth Advantage compare to LEED?
As far as apples to apples and...
Right, I mean, there is a LEED multifamily housing standard, isn't there?
Yeah, there is, and I am not a specialist on all the what Earth Advantage offers and what they don't offer, but I can tell you that they're doing the same type of thing. It's stormwater management, it's energy-efficient appliances, it's mechanical systems at their utmost efficiency. It's local materials that you're going to end up buying. It's I don't know all the specifics of LEED and then energy.
Earth Advantage, but it's, maybe Andy.
It's definitely a program that PDC is helping us guide through the certification process, and we have a.
So, this is part of PDC's
absolutely
guidelines. Earth Advantage is.
Okay. Absolutely. And there's a representative that's helping, looking at our project, mm-hmm. making sure that it's meeting A, B, and C to get that certification.
So the metal welded wire deck infill panels.
Those are the guardrails for the decking themselves.
Are those going to be black or metal?
They're going to be bronze. They'll be painted out bronze. Okay. Same as the deck rails. The backup structure, and then the rest of the material in the inset pieces will be the accent color.
Okay. I guess.
Do you want a stainless steel?
Do you have a sample of that?
Yeah, it's right here. It's not painted. I couldn't paint it. Well, actually, I tried one with a brush, and it turned out not that nice. So it's right here.
Oh, I see. It's down there. Then. Yeah.
And that is the true scale to 1x3, which is kind of in the same proportions as our vertical orientation of our windows on our building. So that theme kind of wraps around the whole project.
Well, yeah, I'm not a designer, I guess, but that's the only thing that kind of aesthetically bothers me, but I don't have a better suggestion.
Honored.
I don't have a better suggestion. Where do you see it? On page, is that C.29?
Do those also act as trellises?
You're fine with it. I'm sorry, Tom.
I thought I saw a picture. It looked like they also act as a trellis.
Oh, that's actually it's similar, but it's basically called a green screen, and it's a sandwich panel of kind of a welded wire mesh that comes together, and they create panels, and it's basically it's this stuff right in here. So there's panels.
I didn't realize.
It grows up.
That's engineering green.
Yeah. So it is the.
That's the not deck. The deck. It's the green the screen deck. Is not the deck.
Anyway, that's fine.
Anything else?
Other questions? Thank you, sir.
Thank you. And what a great pleasure to show you guys. I was stressing out about it.
We could tell.
Yeah, thank you.
And now we... Call any person who opposes the appeal.
No one signed up.
Okay, and now the rebuttal by the appellant. Mr. Davis, your turn again. A nice suit, by the way.
Well, thank you very much. You have excellent taste.
I just demonstrated I can be a pain in the ass, but that's...
Yeah, Dan likes blue suits over gray, so...
okay. Tempest Fugit. I have two major concerns. One, and this is extremely important because I take this very seriously, almost as seriously as Commissioner Stenn. We have to nail down the number of units for veterans that are 0 to 30% or homeless, and we have to make sure that those men who have served our country, have been screwed over for 40 years, get decent housing. Not what we heard yesterday at a URACI meeting, where they will be getting smaller units, regardless of what the architect has said. Apparently, there's a disconnect between PDC and the architect and the developer. And so I would strongly suggest that this be nailed down. Second of all, I find that wire mesh and a rich pallet have been meshed together, so to speak. I don't think of wire mesh as a rich pallet. I think of it as pretty much cheap housing, or in that matter, something that you'd see in a parking structure somewhere in downtown. The illustrations that we keep seeing of this building are a perspective to make it look as tall as possible. But so far, no one here has seen this building in context with the rest of the South Waterfront. Now, I know that at least four of you folks have seen me here for the last 6 years complaining about height and things like this. These 65-foot story or 65-foot buildings will be put on blocks that should be having 250-foot tall buildings, and they'll be surrounded by buildings that are 250 feet to 325 feet, with the exception, of course, of the spaghetti factory to the south. We don't see context here, for instance. How does this building fit with the rest of it? We know that the construction is the very least expensive available. It was designed primarily.
Are you suggesting it should be taller?
I've been suggesting that it should be either taller or however you can get more families into that neighborhood. Because right now what we have in South Waterfront is essentially an economic gated community.
So taller.
And so if it has to be taller, fine. It should be taller. But our neighborhood has been without children and therefore without schools and other increments that one would find in the neighborhood for over 30 years. Now, when do we get a shot at this? When do we get to get our schools back, our filling stations back, our churches or synagogues back? Everything has moved. And all we are getting, we're becoming a bedroom community. This is the opportunity now, today, to send this back. I've talked to the developer. I said, we're willing to work with you. I haven't heard a thing from Homer, but our neighborhood is always willing to work with developers so that we can find some mutual ground. So essentially, we're not arguing about anything except more of as opposed to less. So when you make your decisions, please consider these two things. We must nail down those things that are going to benefit our veterans. We cannot have SRO units and call that housing for these men. They've been kicked enough. And when you think about this project, think of it within the context of this entire project, the central section of the South Waterfront. Thank you for your time. If there are any other questions, I'll be glad to try to answer them.
Just one, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Davis, just curious. I didn't declare. I guess we did meet a while back on this project and had a good conversation. And I think I was more interested in the argument, and it's a good argument, of trying to get kids into this building before we came up with the strategy, which now appears that it's going to be successful. And a lot of people in my office have been working very hard at it, along with the mayor's office, to get formerly or nearly homeless veterans into the building. And I guess my sense at this point is that those two strategies are somewhat mutually exclusive, that I don't see an argument for building a building hubbed around services for homeless veterans and children. I'm not going to say it's impossible, but it would be fairly difficult to make a building that really truly worked well for both those populations. And so I have, with the advent of the Veterans Hospital and the Veterans Project, and given that the tram goes to the VA, I see an opportunity to do something unprecedented for veterans in a location that is literally unprecedented in the nation in terms of below a tram, below, within short walk, to a veterans hospital that, although I share your passion for family housing, I think there are many other places, including, which I think we need to continue to push for, in South McAdam, for children. And so that's part of why, and I just wanted to share that with you and see if you had any response, because I know you filed this appeal before the vet, and I know your issue isn't just about programming, and I'm probably running askance of the on-the-record rules, but I did want to point out to the audience that I know you filed this before the veterans opportunities surfaced.
Well,
I don't know if that's a question or statement, but
perhaps well
your thoughts on my statement is my question.
Perhaps well is my best answer to that. I don't agree that veterans should be any more isolated than they are now. We don't have to walk a block to see what isolation has done to these people. And when you talk to people that have been out on the streets, one of the things that comes across very, very clearly is their lack of being able to see a spectrum of people. Because these people are out on the street, because they have had to live the lives they had, does not mean that they're a threat to children. They probably haven't had a chance to talk to a kid in 10 years. So I don't see, I understand your point, but I don't agree with it. I think that you need to try as much as possible. I mean, God knows we've invested $268 million in infrastructure down there. Surely we can be able to try to bring some sort of normalcy to these men's lives. It's not just a tram ride from 70 feet above sea level up to Veterans Hospital and back.
Jim, we're certainly in agreement that the goal is to bring normalcy
to
them.
Let's leave it right there.
And I would just say, if I implied that a child would be unsafe with a homeless veteran, it wasn't so much that, is that the way you design a building to safely provide play space, the right size bedrooms, the types of things that children need to be safe in any number, and the services that are going to need to be in this building. We need to provide space for the Veterans Administration. We need to have a whole variety of things that you're just trying to get a lot into one block if you try and put both of those into it. That was my point, as opposed to...
Yes, I understand, Commissioner Sten, but tell me this. You're going to be leaving shortly, and I'm saddened by that because you've certainly shared many of my concerns. But when is our time then? When do we get our children back? When do we get our schools back? We've been waiting years and years, decades, and it's not coming. I've been in this neighborhood association since 1983. We were worse off then than we are now, but not by much. Our neighborhood does not function as any neighborhood that I'm aware of in the city, with the exception of perhaps the Pearl. When I first came to Portland, I lived at 6819 Southeast 82nd Street. Neat neighborhood. People, kids, everything. Six blocks from here, you won't find a child unless they're in school. And without children, we don't have a neighborhood, and without neighborhoods, we don't have a Portland anymore. And so that really is the basis for what we are talking about here today. We need affordable family housing, not single rooms, not two bedrooms at some $900 a month. The question is, who will even be using these things? How do I sign up to get one of these places? Is this just nothing more than camouflage for perhaps more student housing? We don't know. After all, I can tell you that the number of units of student housing produced by the medical school at OHSU is exactly the same number as the times that you gentlemen have been invited to go bowling with the Pope. Try zero. Now, what are we going to be doing about that as well? Who gets into these places outside of the 10, 20, or 40 some veterans? So I guess what I'm asking is to help us help revitalize our neighborhood through architecture and through planning. And again, we're being told, no, not yet. Your turn will come, but no, not yet. And I'm saying, yes, it is now, because we can't wait any longer. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Davis.
I don't need to hear from the staff unless the council needs to.
Further?
I'm prepared to make a motion.
Excuse me, the city attorney.
I would have one thing to add, and I'm not going to presume to know where the direction of this is going, but there
well,
is...
Well, momentarily.
If there is a decision to deny the appeal and uphold the findings, there was one very minor change in the findings because from the questioning we learned that it was not LEEDS certification but another, and there's a mention of LEEDS in here, and I just want your findings to be correct if that's the direction.
I'm going to make a motion, and what should I include in my motion?
On page 11 of the findings, you would amend pursuing LEED certification and substitute for the word LEED Earth Advantage.
What was the name again?
Earth Advantage, and substitute that for LEED on page 11 of the findings.
Okay, I'm going to move to deny the appeal and uphold the decision by the Design Commission, and to amend on page 11 the word LEED with Earth Advantage.
Do we have to do those one at a time, or can we do both? Do we have to do the amendment first, or can we do them together?
You can do them together. This is a set of findings, and his moving to adopt findings with that change to it. I think it would be fine to do it as one.
Do I hear a second? Please call the vote.
Adams?
I want to thank Jim for your testimony today. I appreciate it, and certainly share your goals for providing opportunities for families in both South Waterfront and in the Pearl District. But in this particular case, I'm going to support the motion because I think there is an urgent need for veterans housing, and I think there is a once-in-a-generation opportunity to put it right here. I also am very impressed with the quality, as has been presented today, in terms of the kind of development that this would be. The location in terms of access to transit, access to the waterfront, amenities that are rare in any neighborhood, but rare still for housing that is specifically designed for the needs and wants of veterans. And we have more returning here than ever before. And we recently held a veterans summit, a couple of veterans summits, and the notion of veterans being able to live with each other and the mutual support that comes with that, especially as close as this is to medical care, is something that they asked for out of the summit. So you're helping to fulfill a need that has been expressed in public settings. So I vote aye.
Leonard.
Aye.